Hello everyone, this is Massimo Bonisoli, Senior Equity Analyst at Equita, and I am covering the oil and gas and shipping sector in Italy and Southern Europe. Welcome to this presentation hosted by Capital Link Deep Dive Webinar Series. As part of that series, we have the opportunity to speak to Carlos Balestra di Mottola, CEO of D'Amico International Shipping. D'Amico is a leading international marine transportation company operating in the product tanker market, listed on the Milan Stock Exchange since 2007. Ticker is DISMI, and traded also on the OTCQX Best Market in the US since 2023 with the ticker symbol DMCOF. Our discussion will focus on the recent development and strategy update of D'Amico International Shipping, as well on the outlook of the energy market and product tanker shipping. Now, the usual disclaimer. Before starting the call, please note that this discussion is strictly for informational and educational purposes and should not be relied upon as investment advice or an offer to buy or sell securities. Capital Link bears no responsibility for the content. Let us now begin with our discussion. Hello, Carlos. For those in the audience who are less familiar with D'Amico, Carlos, why don't we start with a brief overview of the company, some recent history, and the profile of the fleet?
Hello, Massimo. Yes, of course. That's a good place to start our call today. D'Amico International Shipping is part of the wider D'Amico group. The D'Amico family has been in shipping since the 30s. And its ultimate holding company was established in 1952. So D'Amico International Shipping comprises all the product tanker activities of the D'Amico family, of the D'Amico group. And it has been listed on the Milan Stock Exchange since 2007. D'Amico International S.A. is the vehicle through which D'Amico International Shipping is controlled, and it has a 60.66% stake in the company. Today, D'Amico International Shipping controls a modern fleet of 32 product tankers with an average age of 9.4 years, mostly eco-designed, 85%. The fleet is composed of 29 owned vessels and three bareboat chartered-in vessels. And we have an equal presence on the LR1 and MR1 segments with six vessels in each of these segments. But our biggest presence is on the in the MR2 segment, where we have 20 vessels.
Carlos, great. Could you, remaining on the basics, could you talk us through what you have done with the fleet size, vessels, and ownership type over the past few years?
Yeah, thanks, Massimo. We have invested substantial amounts over the last few years. We had a very important new building program where we started ordering vessels in 2012, which were then delivered to us between 2014 and 19, 22 vessels. And we invested $920 million to take delivery of these vessels. All eco design vessels, all built at very good shipyards in either Korea or in Vietnam, the Vinachin yard controlled by the Hyundai Mipo group. The product tanker sector, as well as our company, however, did go through some difficult years. There was a prolonged downturn, which started in 2009 and lasted until the end of 21. Where we only had a few bright periods in 15 and 20. And therefore, as a result of this difficult period, our indebtedness rose substantially, reaching 73% measured as net financial position to fleet market value at the end of 18. We also had to pursue two capital increases in 17 and 19. But since then, thanks to the strong markets we experienced starting in 2022, we were able to delever our balance sheet substantially and reduce this ratio, net financial position to fleet market value, to only 10% at the end of March this year. Despite this strong deleveraging, we continued investing during this period. And we did so also at very attractive levels, because most of our investments were done by exercising purchase options on vessels we had time chartered in, since they were delivered to us from the yards. These were all very good vessels built at first-class Japanese shipyards. We exercised six such options since 2022. We also bought the 50% stake in a JV we had with the Glencore Group, which controlled four vessels. And we did order also four LR1s for new buildings, which will be delivered to us in the second half of 2027. And for that, we already invested $262 million. We have another 191 still to be invested to take delivery of these four new buildings. So for a total investment of just over $450 million. So also over the last few years, we were able to continue investing at attractive levels, to ensure we continue controlling a very modern and competitive fleet.
Good. So let's continue with your market approach, the risk aversion in general, and your cover ratio. Over the past few quarter, rates were fairly high, and your coverage was rather low, as you wanted to be more exposed to spot rates. What is your general rule of employment of your vessel between spot market rather than the TC contract, and has anything changed today?
Yes, we usually aim to afford coverage over the following 12 months of between 40 to 60%. But over the last few years, the outlook was extremely strong, and we decided to be a bit more aggressive. And during a few quarters, our coverage was as low as 30%. And it turned out to be the right decision, because we did do better on the spot market than we did on the vessels for which we had period contracts. Nonetheless, there are many geopolitical events which are well beyond our control, which are affecting the market, which influence the market positively over the last few years. And some of these factors might not be there in the future. And it is very difficult to predict how these geopolitical events will unfold. And therefore, we decided to increase coverage slightly, bringing it back to the usual levels we usually aim for. So we are now just over 50% for the last three quarters of 2025, at very attractive levels, very profitable levels for us, of just under $24,000 per day. So we are happy to have this coverage. We hope we are going to be continue doing better on the spot market than on these period contracts, but it's good to have these secure profits in case things don't go as expected.
So now let's talk about your capital deployment. In 2024, shareholder remuneration was strong, and you also ordered four new vessels, as you mentioned earlier, along with the exercise of the purchase option of some of your vessel under TC contract. What are your main priorities in this respect in 2025?
Yeah, I think that we did talk about the investments we have made by exercising options. We have these four new buildings that still have to be delivered to us. So we are not currently looking to make further investments at this stage. We will continue investing to make our vessels more efficient when they do stop for dry dock, but these are not big amounts. But we are studying also technologies which could entail larger investments and especially for our new buildings, but which potentially could also be adopted for some of our vessels on the water. It's true, we also have remunerated our shareholders very generously over the last few years. Since 2022, we have paid cumulative dividends of $137 million, and we have bought back shares worth around $17 million. In particular, in the last year, in 2024, our payout ratio, including both dividends and share buybacks, was of around 40%. We paid the dividends out of the 24 profits of almost $89 million of $65 million, and we bought back shares also last year amounting to $10 million. So going forward, we still have to decide what our priorities will be in terms of dividends. Whilst last year we had a very clear idea in this respect, we don't have a dividend policy, but we did communicate from the beginning of the year that our intention was to respect this payout ratio of 40%. This year, the geopolitical events influencing the market are more uncertain, and so we cannot provide any guidance with respect to the payout ratio. And hopefully, in a few months' time, we will be able to provide more visibility in this respect.
Good. And moving to the market spot rates of clean tanker shipping, you mentioned the previous few quarters of high volatility, but also high and very good rates. From your privileged point of view, what are the main current moving parts of the spot rates in the short term?
Yeah, the market is has been very volatile, very difficult to predict short term. We are currently seeing some weakness mostly in the Atlantic and in particular in the US Gulf. And that is a bit surprising because actually refinery utilization in the US Gulf is quite high. It's at the latest reading I have is 93% of a few weeks ago. Of course there is scope for this utilization to move even higher. It has been in the recent past even above 95%. But at these levels, we should be seeing a much stronger market than we are seeing in the US Gulf. I believe that the fact that inventories are currently very low in the US is preventing more product from being exported. So it's first being kept probably domestically to meet local needs. But soon this product is going to hit the market, the export market, and we're going to be seeing a more positive dynamic for freight rates also in the US Gulf. We are, however, seeing over the last few days, we have seen a much stronger market in the East of Suez. It is strong in North Asia, not brilliant, but strong. It is very strong in Southeast Asia, and it is extremely strong already in the Middle East, where we are back at levels we have seen in June last year. A lot of strength on the LR2 segment and LR1 segment also, but also flowing down to the MRs. We have been seeing more NAFTA moving to China, also because of the tariffs imposed by China on US LPG imports, and that's a competing feedstock for the petrochemical industry. And China's petrochemical industry has been growing rapidly over the last few years, so it is importing substantial amounts of NAFTA from the Middle East. But there is scope going forward also for further strength, also because refining margins have been moving up, which is opening arbitrages. And possibly we could then be seeing also more product moving again on longer haul trades from the Middle East to Europe and to the US. We have seen a decline in these volumes over the last few months, but they could come back because of this of these stronger margins now, which might justify the additional cost of transporting these products around Cape of Good Hope. And also the strong crude tanker markets, especially Aframaxes and Suezmaxes, have been doing very well so far this year. Has meant that more LR2s have migrated to dirty trades. So, despite the increasing number of LR2s which are being delivered, we have seen a decline in the overall number of LR2s trading clean this year. Because, as expected, the crude markets have been strong and they have been drawing more vessels into that trade. So that should continue supporting, I believe, the product tanker market going forward. That will be especially important this summer, and it might mean we not might not see the cannibalization we saw last year from non-coated tankers. The acceleration in the unwinding of cuts by OPEC Plus is also a positive for the crude tanker markets, but generally speaking, also for the product tanker markets because of these connections between the two markets. And then you also, of course, have more oil generally in the market, lower oil prices, higher refining margins, which is positive. And if this continues long enough, and if the unwinding is aggressive enough, we might actually see the market going into contango. We have already seen the longer part of the oil forward curve going to contango. The shorter part of the curve is still in backwardation, but we could see the whole structure of the market of the forward curve going to contango if OPEC continues with this aggressive unwinding policy. And so many factors which have been influencing the market and which should drive further strength in the market going forward. One additional one, Massimo, which is also important, is Iran and generally sanctions which are being placed on vessels. We have seen a number of vessels being sanctioned, which were mostly involved with Russian trades at the end of the Biden administration. And then since Trump took office, we have seen further vessels being sanctioned, mostly now those linked to Iranian trades. If this maximum pressure policy continues in relation to Iran as a tool to reach an agreement on the nuclear development, then during the process, this will be positive for the market because it will reduce exports of Iran of crude oil. Iranian exports reached 1.6 million barrels per day last year. When Trump was last president, they were as low as 400,000 barrels per day. So there is scope for these exports to be reduced substantially, and therefore creating space for non-sanctioned oil, more non-sanctioned oil to be exported on non-sanctioned vessels. And even if some sort of agreement on Iran's nuclear development were reached, this could also be positive for the market because it would mean that Iran's export wouldn't be sanctioned anymore, and therefore that market would then be opened up for the transportation of Iranian oil also by non-sanctioned tankers. So I see a lot of positives going forward, but of course, there are many geopolitical forces at play, and very hard to forecast how they will play out.
A very interesting point, Carlos. Now let's discuss some of these key factors that contributed to the trade disruption in the past. You mentioned it, this earlier. Let's get into deep of some of them, starting with the sanction on Russia. The sanction imposed by Europe on Russia due to the war in Ukraine have led to a significant change in the flow of refined products, with Russia selling a large portion of its refined product to more distant locations in Asia and Middle East and Africa instead of Europe. This has contributed to an increase in overall trade flows, and now investors are more concerned about the implication of a future ceasefire and the lifting of sanctions against Russia. What would happen in case of reversal? And do you believe this is a possible scenario in the near future?
Yeah, I mean, this is maybe, I think, the main concern in investors' mind. And of course, the Ukrainian war and the change in trade flows linked to that conflict have contributed to a big increase in ton miles, estimated by some analysts as much as 7%. So it is justifiable that investors are concerned that an end to this war and the removal of sanctions could have a very negative effect on the market. However, I think it is important to take into account that Europe generally is taking a very different stance from the US in relation to this conflict. And it recognized the risks. It recognizes today the risks involved in being over-reliant on Russian energy. And therefore, the European Commission recently published a roadmap for eliminating any sort of dependence on Russian energy. So even if the war in Ukraine were to end soon, it is very unlikely that Europe will go back to importing Russian oil. And if anything, there seems to be a strong political will to gain complete independence from r Russian energy. And what contributed to the increase in ton miles were not the US sanctions, but it was the European sanctions. So if US sanctions are removed, it is possible that more Russian product will be exported to the US. Before the war started, actually, flows from Russia to the US were actually quite limited. But it could become a new market for Russia, but it is very unlikely that these products would be transported on shadow fleet vessels, which are transporting most of the Russian production today, most of the Russian exports today. That is because these vessels have been very badly maintained. It'd be very expensive to upgrade these vessels to the standards which are required to trade with the US, because US port state controls are very demanding. So what we might have is that the end of the war in Ukraine does not negatively affect ton miles, but it actually might open more the Russian market to non-sanctioned vessels, which actually might end up being a positive. And it might lead to a shrinkage in the available trades for shadow tanker vessels, which might lead to accelerated scrapping of the shadow fleet, which would also be positive for the market. So the situation in relation to the war in Ukraine is not as clear-cut as it could have looked some time ago, because of this strong stance that Europe is taking against Russia.
Yeah, and moving to the other trade flow disruptors, like the one with the Red Sea, due to the attacks on vessels in the Red Sea, vessels have to sail the longer route through the Cape of Good Hope, which is more expensive but was justified by the high refining margin at that time. What could be the eventual implication of the reopening of that route on ton mile demand?
Yeah, that is true. I mean, in the first half of last year, refining margins were very high, and there were substantial amounts that were sailing through Cape of Good Hope. So when flows through the Suez Canal fell dramatically as a result of the attacks by the Houthis, we had a very positive ton-mile effect. However, since then, refining margins came down, and volumes being transported from the Middle East to Europe, overall volumes also declined substantially, because of the higher costs associated with sailing the longer route through Cape of Good Hope. So a reopening of the Red Sea might actually lead to an increase in volumes exported from the Middle East to Europe, which might compensate for the negative ton mile effect of these volumes sailing the shorter route. So it is not certain that this would be a negative for the market.
And maybe another factor, which is not a real disruptor, but is a new factor on the market, related to the new Trump policies and the implication of the U.S. port fees on Chinese-built vessels. The threat of U.S. port fees on Chinese-built vessels or vessels operated by companies with Chinese-built vessels in their fleet could have a significant impact on the tanker market. What would be the main implication for D'Amico in this case?
Yes, Massimo, this what the initial proposal was narrowed substantially in scope, and it now applies only to import cargoes, and it applies only to Chinese built vessels or Chinese companies, but not to fleets of vessels which comprise Chinese built vessels, as had been initially proposed. With this more limited scope, it will be much less impactful, and also more importantly for the tanker sector, there are exclusions for vessels which are of 55,000 deadweight ton or smaller, and potentially there are exclusions also for LR1s, but that is still to be clarified. So It only affects the LR tools built in China or Chinese company controlling product tankers when it comes to the product tanker sector. So it's much more limited in scope. However, the positive aspect is that it reduces appetite for new buildings in China. China was receiving the large majority of tanker orders, and generally it was dominated shipbuilding also in other sectors recently. And Chinese yards were doing well, and they were increasing shipbuilding capacity, and that could have been a threat for the market balance going forward. Now, with these fees, the appetite generally across shipping for ordering vessels in China is much lower, especially in other sectors, but also on the tanker sector. And this will be good for the market going forward. It means that some of these expansion plans might not go ahead. And it might also mean that there'll be a rationalization again in shipbuilding capacity in China in the future. So I think that is good, and we are already starting to see that only 10 MRs and LR1s were ordered in the first quarter of this year, which is a much lower number than we saw ordered during the same period last year. So I think that that is positive. That is a very positive aspect of these proposed fees by the USTR.
Talking about the fleet capacity and the global fleet supply, half of the global fleet now is approaching scrapping age, while the MR order book scheduled for delivery between 2025 and 2028 is still relatively thin, representing only 15% of the current global fleet. Are you anyway concerned about the new capacity coming on stream? And when do you expect ship owners to start scrapping their very old vessels?
Yeah, there has been very limited scrapping since 2022 because of the very strong markets, because these very old vessels were able to fly in the employment on these shadow trades. But there's only at a certain point, they need to be scrapped, even in strong markets. And we are seeing now that already, if we look across all tankers, you have 17.5% of the fleet, which is more than 20 years. So it's a substantial amount. And the order book is of only 13.7%. So there's still a 3.8% positive delta here, which means that there is really scope for the fleet to contract at a certain point in time in the future if we don't continue seeing orders coming in at a very fast clip, new orders. And as I mentioned just now, we have seen a reduction in appetite for new buildings recently. So I think there's a good chance that starting from 2028, we might actually see negative fleet growth. If we look, for example, at only MRs and LR1s, 4% of the trading fleet is going to reach 25 years of age in 2028. So that's in only 3 years' time. And then after that, every year there's a gradual increase in the percentage of the fleet which is reaching this 25-year threshold, which is the average age at which these product tankers are usually demolished. And by 2023, we will have 8% of the trading fleet reaching that age. So it's a very big percentage. And it is unlikely that enough vessels will be delivered during those years for compensate for the for the demolition activity.
And now back to a few questions on the D'Amico positioning and market approach. One on the break-even cost following the recent exercise of the vessel purchase options you mentioned earlier. What would be your new financial break-even in this market environment?
Our financial break-even for 25 is of around $14,000 per day. Our P&L break-even is slightly higher, of around $15,000 per day. So, despite the inflationary pressures of the last few years, we have managed to keep costs under control and actually reduce our break-evens thanks to the very strong deleveraging that we implemented.
And regarding some asset liability management in the balance sheet, your financial debt has declined very quickly to a very low loan to value. So what would be your fair level of debt that you want to have in your balance sheet? And on the asset side, how many vessels do you consider to be an optimal size for your fleet?
Yeah, we are very happy to have a very low debt level today. This gives us a lot of strategic flexibility to invest more when opportunities arise, and we work in a cyclical market, so opportunities will eventually arise for us to acquire more tonnage at more attractive levels, and we are ready. We will then be ready to move fast and aggressively if that will be the right thing to do. And of course, when that happens, our leverage ratios will increase. And I wouldn't be surprised if they were going to move back to around 50% against mid-cycle values, which would still be a relatively low level. Fleet-wise, we are happy where we stand today with the four LR1s we ordered and the 32 vessels we currently have on the water. We will be selling in the coming years some of our older non-eco vessels, and these will be replaced by the new buildings we ordered. So we expect to have approximately the same fleet in a few years' time by the end of 2027. But of course, we never know because, if opportunities arise and if the market moves in a meaningful way, then we might be more aggressive on the investment front, which means our fleet size might actually increase.
And now let's move to a question regarding the financial market. Now, the stock trades at wide discount to NAV, to NAV. Why, in your opinion, do you think D'Amico and also the stocks in the clean tanking sector in general currently trade at wide NAV discount?
Yes, the discount is extremely big now. I mean, if we look at the discount relative to our NAV as at 31st of March, we are at around a 55% discount. But maybe even more surprisingly, we are at a 40% discount to book value as at the same date. So, and for us, the way we see it, that the book value is it's really the floor of where we should be trading, of where our NAV could go, because the most of our vessels in our fleet, the large majority, were bought at the very bottom of the market, especially these 22 new buildings. These prices we bought these vessels at, we don't think we are ever going to be seeing them again because of the inflation we experienced over the last few years. So this 40% discount to book value, we think is really excessive. And why is that? Well, asset values are correlated with freight rates, and in particular with period rates. And we have seen a softening in rates over the last year. Therefore, of course, the NAV is a picture at a point in time, and if the market is softening, going through a softening trend, the NAV, our picture as at 31st of March, might not correspond to our NAV as at the end of April or as at the end of May. Eventually, we expect these freight rates and time charter levels to stabilize and actually start moving up again, and we are already seeing that from a freight perspective east of Suez, where we currently have very strong markets, and there is a good chance that these markets might become stronger also in the Atlantic in the coming weeks, and then this might push up TC rates, stabilize asset values, eventually push up against asset values. And then at that point in time, we think that the sentiment generally will improve. Investors did very well, those investors that invested in the product tanker sectors a few years ago. So a lot of them sold out of their positions, realizing very significant profits. But there is scope for these investors to move in again, or new investors to move into the sector when the tide starts turning again. And it is not uncommon in a bull market, in a positive cycle, part of the cycle like we are experiencing now, for the market to have these softer periods during these up cycles. Followed then by a recovery. So, if that happens, then we think that sentiment overall could improve, and investors could come back, and we could start seeing the share price going up and this discount falling again.
Thank you, Carlos. In summary, if I got correctly, we can say that demand is expected to stay steady, and that supply is not currently a real concern, while there are risk factors on the market which have some potential mitigant factors. So I would like to thank you, Carlos. It was a privilege to talk to you. I appreciate the conversation, and thanks to the Capital Link team for putting it together. Cheers.
Thank you, Massimo, for your time today and for your very interesting and relevant questions. And thank you, Capital Link, also for organizing this event.
Bye.